How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you, Dr. Ray the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
They don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
For the life of me, I don't understand why people listen. You got one going, I don't know what to do, and then I say, I don't either. Then you got another one saying, I'm getting my money's worth, which is zero, because she didn't pay for anything. So, I guess you could extrapolate from that and say, what am I listening for? I don't know why you are, but I do appreciate it. Maybe you just don't have anything better to do with your time. You don't want to clean out the gutters again before the season. So you figure, all right, or the one final lawn mowing. One thing bad about this warm weather here in the Midwest, the grass keeps growing. Used to be you could stop mowing in first part of November. Now you're mowing up to Thanksgiving and thereafter. Nice to have you. This is Doctor Zinn. This is not a climatological comment. This is a call-in program, but this version of the program, this variant, is E-Person Monday. Had to find a way to address a lot of the e-persons that come in, and we get a lot of them, as many as we get calls. Now, a lot of them can be answered right away quick, which means I can send just a direction or something that refers them to a therapist in their area or some place to look for someone who would respect their Catholic worldview, or a recommendation for a book, or recommendation for one of my books. do that. But some of them are situations, they're circumstances, and I'm pushing on my phone here because I want to go back and see what I got coming up. So I'll take care of that momentarily here. Alrighty. Opening monologue. I've been wrestling an awful lot with how many dads really don't exert a healthy authority. It used to be, at least from what little I understand from talking to older people, or even reading, that males were viewed as kind of a strong, hopefully velvet hand in the discipline area. That the moms could afford to be a little more loose in their discipline because dad was there. Now, one might say, yeah, but, oh, boy, that was back in the days when dads had a heavy hand. They were just autocratic, overbearing Neanderthals. You can make that case if it drifts to an extreme, but I think by and large, dads were viewed as a healthy authority, I think, in the majority, I think that's safe to say. From what I hear, I talk to hundreds and hundreds of parents, and they will comment, they will say, my dad or my grandpa or the people in my life, I respected and they had a healthy authority. I benefited from that. But now I just deal with so many dads who, for whatever the reason, let their wives do it. Maybe it's laziness. You know, let her handle it. I don't want to deal with a snotty six-year-old mouthing off. Or they're oblivious. It's like, yeah, I'm going to pay attention to what I'm doing here, watching whatever I'm watching, whatever it is, because it doesn't register that this kid is arguing with his mother or this kid is getting nasty back there in another room. I'm just watching the game here. I don't want to be bothered. So they're oblivious. Or some of them, I've had dads do this. Some of them say, well, you know, I don't want to be the autocrat like my dad was, so I just don't want to do that. But what they do to compensate is they become lax. It's not a matter of they get away from being an autocrat with consistent loving discipline. No,
they go to the other extreme and they're lax or they're permissive or uninvolved because, well, they just don't want to be like their dad was, who was a little too heavy-handed in their opinion. I see that. But the umbrella theme over all of this is that guys have just surrendered the strong leadership role in raising kids, especially in the area of discipline. I tell the guys, you know, your wives would be incredibly grateful if they didn't have to be the heavy, if you stepped in and said, your mother said go to the corner, now you go to the corner right now, or I'm going to levy heavy consequences on you. If you did that, they would feel protected. Guys, I'm talking to you. Don't let your wives carry this load. Well, she's the main child rearer. You know, I don't want to come home from work and just automatically walk in, and if she's been there for some time and I have to come in and be the heavy. Yes and no. If the kids gave her grief throughout the day, then in a way they're mistreating their mother, but they're also mistreating your wife. You going to do anything about that? I think a lot of guys, believe it or not, are afraid of being disliked by their kids. Well, you're running a higher risk of being disliked if your discipline is weak. Because ultimately the kids will push. And when they push, you're going to get frustrated. And when you get frustrated, you're going to yell. And you're going to get nasty and you're going to get ugly. You're going to explode and erupt. Well, that doesn't exactly make kids like you. Go to the corner, please. You need to write your mother a 400-word apology for talking to her like that. You didn't raise your voice. You conveyed a message. I'm going to not only teach you, but I'm going to protect my wife. She should not have to deal with this. Now, a lot of guys will say, yeah, I can try that, but she'll if she doesn't agree with me, she'll undercut me. She won't let me be the authority. That's a different dynamic. I don't have time to get into it right now. That's a marital dynamic. But there are huge percentages of ladies out there who would be very grateful if their husband stepped in and took that leadership role in the discipline instead of letting mom do it. Routinely, if a mom comes into my office, I ask, where's your husband in all this? And almost as routinely, they will say, he kind of ignores it, or he's not as involved, or he doesn't think it's as bad, or he doesn't like my style, or he doesn't agree. Yeah, it's like, okay, now mom's feeling like, okay, I've got to do this, and I'm taking the heat, and old dad over there is just kind of sliding along. I don't know if any of this is related to the way men have been made to look like absolute doofuses in our culture, or toxic. If they are manly and strong, it's relentless, you know. If my wife and I watch something on a streaming, if we watch a series, say, for example, that we like at night on a streaming channel, it's relentless. It is absolutely relentless. The protagonists, the strong persons, the competent persons, the heroes, almost always women. Always. If you look at the trailers for upcoming shows, it's the women. It's the women who can take charge. It's the women who are in charge. It's the women who dominate. The guys are kind of like just, yeah, you're kind of a tag along. You're kind of just somebody that's there. We kind of let you kind of be there, but you're sort of, you know, kind of a doofus. It's relentless. It is just relentless. And you got to say, that's got to take a toll. There's no way it can't. So, in essence, yeah, there is a message that the women can handle all this, and they can be the authorities in their home, and they don't need the guys to be the authorities. Well, that generally doesn't work real well if the guys are not involved. Now, you got a lot of moms who are good authorities. They're very good at it. Okay. But would it be easier for them if the guy was right beside them? Or dare I say, in front of them, protecting them? Dr. Ray.
This is a time of what would probably best be described as controlled panic.
All the advice, none of the bills. Come in. The doctor is in.
Resetting your password, unsubscribing from emails, printing anything. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with an auto owner's insurance independent agent, getting the right coverage for your business doesn't have to be one of them. So you can get back to more important things, like learning how that printer works. That's simple human sense.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200. The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jangle.
St. Ignatius of Loyola introduces us to three basic steps for becoming a person of discernment. The first step is to be aware. We first must notice what is happening in our interior spiritual experience. This first step invites us to go within our own hearts and notice with our eyes open just a little what spiritual movements we are experiencing. For example, our feelings of fear, anxiety, joy, peace, sadness, and their related thoughts that have to do with our life of faith and the pursuit of God's will in our lives. The second step is to understand. Understanding is about recognizing what within our spiritual experience is from God or is from the enemy. The third step is to take action. If a spiritual movement within our heart is from God, we welcome it and receive the grace that it is as a gift from God. If it is not from God and is from the enemy, we reject it.
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Maybe you've been hearing a lot about the need to make a spiritual communion while participating from home in a live-streamed or broadcast Mass. Maybe you've even prayed the prayer of spiritual communion. Spiritual communion is a concept that goes all the way back to the 4th century. It flourished in the Eastern Church and gradually moved west. Spiritual communion stresses the transcendence of God, where we unite our desires, intentions, and loves with the holy sacrifice of the Mass and the consecration of the Eucharist at the altar. Jesus, I embrace you and unite myself wholly to you.
The doctor is in on this e-person Monday. Dr. Ray, one request. I am 82. I need guidance. Death preparation and hospital preparation documents. Years back, a lady on your TV program offered a document she created instead of the standard hospital advanced care planning. Could I possibly get this form? P.S. My CPA told me to get my business in order. I've been on and off kidney dialysis for the last 14 years. Now I am haunted because not being responsible. Yeah, her name was Rita Marker. She has since passed away. It's a patient's rights council. They merged, I just found out, with another group out of New York. And we had them on the TV show. She spoke a lot about how you protect yourself with a durable power of health attorney. So you get someone who is respectful and will protect your final life decisions, and they will make the decisions for you. Right now, my one daughter has that for my wife and I. So you can contact Patients' Rights Council, and they can guide you. Now, she has a second thing. My mother has had a loss of memory the last 5 years or so. Well, if it's been going on for 5 years, then there's probably a significant loss of memory. Okay, she's probably getting very confused about the present, about the past, about what is still real and what isn't. I learned, Dr. Ray, that even though she lost memory, she kept feelings. She asked me recently how her sister was doing. Now, this sister had passed away over 15 or more years earlier. And I told my mother that her sister had passed away. She experienced the pain as if it were the first time she had heard it. It broke my heart to cause that kind of deep, unnecessary pain. A year or so later, she asked about her brother. I said, "Oh, Mom, he's having a heavenly good time, and his daughter is doing such and such." She had no painful reaction, Dr. Ray. I've seen your program on this subject. My dad, with all good intentions, my grandmother was, her husband died, oh boy, let's see, when did Papa die? Born in 1897, died in 75, died in 1975. Mama lived to 2004, I think, so she was alive 30 years after Papa died. At one point, while she was fairly into dementia, she was at my sister's house, she was sitting there, she said to my dad, "What time is Angelo coming to pick me up?" And my dad, with all good intentions, he was trying to be helpful. He said, "Mom," he said, Angelo passed away." Oh, boy. Oh, boy. You should have seen her reaction. Oh, this was like, in her world, in her confusion, her husband Angelo was still alive. And to be told that he passed away was brand new news to her. Fortunately, her memory was such that within a matter of a couple of minutes, she was distracted and forgot. Whew. In situations like this, when someone who is well into dementia says to you, a loved one is coming to get them, or a loved one is going to visit, or they're going to go see a loved one, you say something nondescript. "Oh, that sounds like that might be a good idea." Or, "Yeah, we'll see when that can happen." Or, "Yeah, he's not here yet." Or something. You're not lying. You're not saying, "No, your loved one is quite alive and she'll be here in a couple of minutes." No, you're not doing that. But you're saying something vaguely reassuring, because to them, for that moment, that is a reality. And in fact, it is something that they truly believe is going to happen. And even if you say, "Well, no, your husband is in heaven now." Even though you may believe that to be true, they don't know he's in heaven because they think he's still alive. So find a way to just kind of massage the topic for the moment. And generally, it fades away. It isn't something that lingers or that they hang on to. And say, "Well, when's he coming? Come on, I've been waiting 10 minutes. Let's go. Come on, when's he coming? He said he was going to be here at 5:15. Let's go." "Eh, he might be late." "Well, I don't know how long I'm going to wait." So, okie dokie. Let's go to another one. "This is my body, this is my blood." This comes from James. No, that's not from the letter of James. This is from a man named James who sent this. Our Lord specifically offered himself to us, and so many followers left because they could not accept this hard teaching. However, it seems to me like an even harder teaching is to love your enemies and do good to those who spitefully use you. Dr. Ray, we may be strong enough to forgive, but most of us want nothing further to do with those who hurt us. What he's saying is, the part about do good to those who hurt you, no, I'd rather just avoid those who hurt me, thank you. I'll forgive them, but I just don't want to be around them. He's saying that is a very hard teaching. And yeah, it is. So the question becomes, who are those? If they are parents, adult children, these are significant relationships. And if, in fact, these relationships, who have the most potential to hurt us, come on. The closer you are emotionally to somebody, the more power they have to hurt you. It's that simple, of course. I don't care what the lady eight houses down the street thinks. I don't even know her. She may think I'm a jerk because I have my leaves blow into her yard from eight houses away. I don't know how that happens, but apparently she does. She identifies the leaves coming from my tree. I don't know. But given that, my sister or my mom, my in-law, gee, they've done some things. And okay, I Lord says forgive. All right, I won't hold a grudge. And I'll pray for him too. I'll do that. But I have to be around them? Come on. It's hard to be around them. They are who they are, and they're not, to me, likable. I don't like being around them. I don't think our Lord is saying you have to immerse your existence, attach it deeply to theirs, but at the same time, do your best to not, I guess, shun them totally. Dr. A, you don't understand. My mother is evil. Well, okay, I've heard a lot of people tell me that. And what they mean is my mother's manipulative, or my mother's opinionated, or my mother's pulled some major league stunts kind of thing. But even at that, you know, she's not dangerous. She's not a threat to your well-being. Well, she is. She's a threat to my emotional well-being. Well, when somebody's a threat to your emotional well-being, you still have a lot of control over your emotions. Now, is she a threat to your physical well-being or your financial well-being or to your children? Okay, that might be a little different. Then you got to go into protective mode. But much of what our Lord, I think, is saying is when you got those people who do hurtful things to you, you do your very best to just, in essence, roll with it, to kind of just let it go past you. Let it go above you. Let it go behind you. You'll be more at peace. If somebody else has the kind of power to distress you like that, especially somebody you have to have contact with. That's the other thing. You know, there's people in your life you have to have contact with. This is your husband's mother. Okay. You're not going to get him to write her off. So what are you going to do to get along with her? She's not easy to get along with at all. She doesn't like me. Okay, all right. You know she doesn't like you. You know she's not easy to get along with. All right. But you don't have to be hostile. You can kind of just limit her power to upset you. You have great control over that. So when Jim here is saying it's a hard teaching, it is, but yet, my experience as a shrink is that in many cases, we still afford too much power to people to make us feel bad. We allow this, they say something we don't like, or they do something we find hurtful, manipulative, double standard, and we get very, very upset. But we always retain our own ability to ratchet up our upset or temper it. '70s theme song music from some kind of uppy sitcom. Dr. A. Grandy here, program Doctors In. This is E-Person Monday, diving into the E-Persons. That's not too violent, is it? I didn't say targeting the E-Persons. I didn't say tackling the E-Persons. I said diving into. Can I use that? Or is that, I don't know, is that too harsh language? Dr. Ray, I'm a longtime listener of your program, and I want to share with you a news article. If you decide to mention it on the air, please do not use my name. Okay. I do not want that attention, she says, ha ha. Our 20-year-old daughter was an intern at a major newspaper this summer. She wrote an opinion piece expressing her gratitude that we did not allow her to have a phone at a young age. Now, when we say phone nowadays, what we typically mean is a smartphone. Okay, a lot of parents would offer a dumb phone to their kids, but the kids would wildly resist it. I think it might edify your listeners who are feeling so much pressure to give their child a smartphone. Here is the link. All right, let me see what we got here. Let me check this link out. Here she goes. I wasn't allowed a smartphone until I was 16. This is the headline. I can't thank my parents enough. I was allowed to get an Instagram account when I turned 18, but I delayed it several months because I knew I would spend too much time on it. Spoiler alert, I did. When I tell my peers that I didn't get my first smartphone until I was 16, their jaws drop. My parents had a hard and fast rule for me and my siblings that we could get a phone only when it became necessary, which in my case was when I got my driver's license. I resented this rule. And parents, you can expect that. Absolutely. Kids are going to resent it. They're going to look around. They're going to see the average age of a smartphone, which is now, I think, 2 days out of the womb, somewhere in there. And how can all those parents be wrong about this and you be right, Neanderthal mom or dad? It was embarrassing to admit to friends that I didn't have a phone number, a Snapchat account, or even Instagram. When I got my first job, I couldn't text my boss when I had questions, or even tune into the employee group chat. I never heard the trending songs or understood the latest internet jokes. So when I bought my first iPhone 7 Plus, what, 10 numbers ago, I was elated to finally, quote, get it. I told my parents I was very excited to use Apple Maps to stay safe on the road. Still, I didn't engage with technology like my peers did. I didn't get a laptop until I was a senior in high school, nor did I have social media or even YouTube on my phone until I graduated. I was allowed to get an Instagram account when I turned 18, but I delayed it several months, and she said, spoiler alert, I did. I wasted hours on Instagram. Now I don't miss it. Plus, I knew I had to get an Instagram account when I began college. No one asks for your phone number anymore. I didn't know that. Gen Z prefers to communicate via Snapchat selfies or Instagram reels. The first few months of college brought in hundreds of new Instagram friends, most of whom I never spoke to again after that first exchange of social media names. I wasted hours on Instagram, although thankfully it didn't have any significant effect on my self-esteem or my body image. It certainly damaged my productivity. A 5-minute study break would turn into a half hour of scrolling. The Reels algorithm knew me too well. That's exactly right. The guys who design these things, they know. The goal is to keep you attached, to keep you clicking. They know what to put in front of you. They know what you've scrolled. Well, the guys don't. The algorithms do. They design these things that way. This is not a matter of, well, you're just going to randomly come across stuff. No, 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 no. You're going to come across the stuff they put in front of you. I decided to give up Instagram for Lent. When I told a friend, she was shocked. You mean you're just not going to look at it for a month? I could never do that. I did take a month off, and it was great. Then I returned to my normal Instagram use, even with the nagging knowledge that it wasn't good for me in college. I kept telling myself that I would delete it eventually, when I graduated, when I got married, when I had a family. I told a friend I would delete it when it was time to grow up. Last Christmas, I realized that it made no sense to keep hanging on to something I planned to cut off, so I deleted my entire account in a spur-of-the-moment impulse. It was a great choice. I don't miss it. My generation is the first to grow up alongside the digital world, which has stunted us in undeniable ways. She's right. I mean, there's all kinds of research coming out of this. There's no shortage of evidence of social media's negative effects on mental health, even leading Surgeon General to call for warning labels. Surgeon General says parents need help with their kids' social media use. Research has found links between excessive internet use and mental health disorders, most notably anxiety and depression. Did I sometimes feel left out because I wasn't plugged in? Of course. However, at age 20, I seemed to have a much healthier relationship with the internet than many of my peers. I didn't have trouble deleting Instagram, and I'm perhaps unreasonably proud that I've never been on TikTok. Okay, she goes on here. I credit my parents' rules and guidelines for proper internet use with my positive relationship with the internet today. One day I will place the same restrictions on my kids if possible so they can develop more meaningful in-person connections, good quality sleep, and healthy attention spans. Children deserve to grow up in the real world. Confession, I have an Instagram account, but I've told my son who manages it, I only want to put things on there that can help people. I only want to make an observation about maybe better living, perhaps what could be an insight in parenting or marriage or faith. That's it. And even I have mixed feelings about that. And I don't want anything on there that's, here's me eating a cheese sandwich. I enjoy cheese sandwiches in the morning. I'm going to have another one tomorrow. Text me back if you enjoy cheese sandwiches too. No, I don't want to do any of that stuff. My wife tells me there's a lot of voices out there misleading people in a lot of ways. And she says, Ray, if your voice can help some, then do it. And by some of the responses I've gotten, some of the views I've gotten, I'm hoping that those 45-second reels that I put on Instagram do give somebody something where they can say, I never thought about that. I might want to incorporate that into the way I live. Radios, and we've done surveys on this, are tuned in to this program than any other kitchen appliance. More radios are tuned in than microwaves, than refrigerators, than blenders. Yeah, even can openers. Yeah, I know you wouldn't believe that, but it's true. Okay, wait a minute. I've just been informed by Eric Dumont, my producer today, that's not a joke. Fridges have radios in them. I didn't know that. I'm so far behind. I still got an ice box. They bring the big block of ice and they put it in there once a day. Dr. Ray, is anxiety hereditary? Well, yes and no. Don't you just love psychologists? I have anxiety. Now, again, when somebody says I have anxiety, you got to really figure out, okay, where and how does it manifest itself? I mean, there's a wide reach of ways that anxiety interferes with life. There's phobias, there's generalized anxiety, there's social anxiety, there's panic attacks. It's all kinds of stuff. So it sounds like our writer may be saying that I'm an anxious person about a lot of things, and it spills over into how I live my life. two of my sons, ages 19 and 25, seem to be experiencing it to some extent as well. I recently read something that said children who have general anxiety disorder, okay, so what she's saying is that, all right, there is a certain anxiousness to living life and the demands of life and moving through life, all right, are 3.5 times more likely to have a mother with general anxiety disorder. In addition, children with social anxiety disorder, and this is generally anxiety around groups, especially those that are larger or unfamiliar, or social situations, are more likely to have a father with anxiety disorder. My husband doesn't have anxiety disorder, but he may have obsessive compulsive disorder. Is that hereditary? And could that be contributing to what my children are experiencing? And here's the kicker. This is the one I got to answer. I can't help but feel guilty if I'm to blame for what they're feeling. Well, first of all, you can't be to blame for your genetics. You didn't pick those. When you were born, or when you were conceived, more accurately, you didn't say, well, wait a minute, hold on here a second. What kind of genetics am I getting? I don't want anything that would be predisposition to a little more higher arousal in situations. Can you can those ones? So that's the first thing. You have absolutely no reason whatsoever to have any sense of responsibility for the fact that you are a somewhat anxious individual, and because of that, your genetics spilled onto your kids. All right, let's lay that one to rest. And if you're still going to feel guilty about that, then you're doing it to yourself, because you have no rational reason. You have no realistic reason to think that. Now that said, is it more likely, although maybe slightly, that your kids would have inherited some of your very complex arousal predisposition? Well, sure. Your kids inherited a whole bunch of stuff from you, kinds of stuff. And your husband, too. You guys mixed together to have those kids in their genetic makeup. But here's the thing. A predisposition, which is what you're talking about with yourself and your boys, is not determination. For example, studies have shown that approximately 25% of alcoholism is physiologically predisposed. Now, that doesn't mean someone has to become an alcoholic. It means they might have to be a little more careful about how they drink. For anxiety, it doesn't mean that someone has to live with that anxiety. It means that if they have a more likely experience, then they can look into what they're doing to themselves, how this is happening. Anxiety, believe it or not, and I'm working on a book on anxiety right now, is something that many, many, many people have in some form. I mean, we are just an anxious society, very anxious. And the irony to that is we are probably the most physically safe society, where we don't live in danger most of the time. But indeed, we're just high anxiety. So, with that in mind, there is a lot of ways to lessen that anxiety, to ease it, to alleviate it. There are. There's just a lot of things you can do. Okay, what are they, Dr. Ray? Well, I'm just answering her question about the genetic predisposition here. You're going to have to buy the book when and if it comes out. But given that, the point to be made is that because there's a predisposition, a genetic predisposition, First of all, it doesn't generally mean there's a likelihood. You know, she says 3.5 times. Well, yeah, that sounds like a lot. However, all of the complex interplay of particular genes that are entering into her more likely ability to be aroused in certain situations, nervousness, panicky, whatever it might show up as, are still less, if you will, than an overall, gee, if I have it, my kids are going to have it. No, that doesn't mean that. It means that, for example, your kids have a little bit more likelihood than the average bear whose parent isn't anxious to experience that kind of reaction to situations. Okay. But again, anxiety is something that, as much as it distresses people, is really one of the more, I want to use the word easy, although people would say, oh, no, it's not easy, Dr. Ray. It's one of the more responsive symptoms to correct. It truly is. It truly, truly is. If you start to understand what it is and why it is doing this to you, and what kinds of things you can change in the way you respond to anxiety, it is something that does ease. It does. So, all right, that said, break time.
But I'm a doctor, and it's my tradition to care for the sick and injured.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
I got time for one more e-person here on The Doctor Is In on this e-person Monday. Interesting. You know, parents have all kinds of cutesy little ways. We had a call on a frustrated parent with potty training. And his mom writes and she says, I have 13 children. And I had a similar potty training problem with my 10th. Well, that ain't bad. One out of 13? What's that, about 8%, something like that? She was always very competitive with her older sister. So if she would go to the potty, I'd give her two lollipops, but that didn't work. Okay. So, this is a veteran mother. I told her if she went to the potty in her pants, her older sister would get the lollipops. Ha! I only had to do that once, Dr. Ray. She was on the toilet from then on. Now, you know, you got some expert types out there. I can hear them. No, don't do that. She'll resent her older sister. This is setting up a much more competitive situation with the older sibling. Oh, please. Come on. This is just a mom who said, I got a little creative solution here, and it took care of it. All right, but here's the one. I think this is the one I suggested this in. Here's a suggestion I have, Dr. Ray, for a chronic problem. Taking your idea of losing certain privileges a step further, I will tell the kids that their privileges are gone. Okay, this was sort of a blackout. Until they act a certain amount of time without the bad behavior. Oh, look at what she did. She called it bad. Oh, bad, 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 bad. She can't do that. Have to say unacceptable, inappropriate. Mistakes were made. So she said, for example, if my 4-year-old son gives me grief at nap time, he loses his privileges until he naps nicely. If the problem is really recurrent, I will make them earn privileges back by going 3 days without the bad behavior habit. If on day three the misbehavior occurs again, I go back to day one. I do this with teenage boys. I have 5 of them right now. And disrespect. They tell me they don't even know when they're being disrespectful, and I'm too picky. But then they have to go 3 days with no disrespect. They magically can figure out how to be disrespectful. It's a miracle. Yeah, I like that one. I've suggested that one often to parents, which is, okay, rather than saying, I'm going to take these particular perks and privileges away because of that, you say, you will need to go X amount of time not doing that kind of behavior, whether it's mistreating a sibling or it's arguing or disrespect or chore shirking or whatever it might be that's kind of a daily irritant. You need to go X amount of time before you get your privileges back. Now, keep in mind that as a parent, you know what privileges are. I mean, most parents underestimate what privileges are. Privileges are just a boatload of things. They're not just dessert. Privileges could be your favorite foods that you like. You might have to eat foods that you don't have at the top of your culinary list. Privileges are no curling iron if you're a 14-year-old girl. Privileges could be not the favorite sweatshirt, too. It includes that if you're a 16-year-old boy. I do like the idea that you need to behave a certain way, a certain acceptable way, to get all your privileges back. Sure, I think that's a great idea. Now, some might say, oh, gee, Dr. Ray, come on. Why do we have to discipline like that? Well, you have to because kids are kids. And much of the time, they misbehave because they're kids. That's all, not because they're bad people, but because they're kids. And it's your idea to socialize them. And you teach them self-control by basically saying, I'm going to make you have self-control. That's right. If somebody wants to lift weights and become stronger, but they don't want to come to the gym on their own, and I can somehow make them, well, then they will get stronger. I made them. Whatever I had to do to make them, they did it. And then, after doing that for a certain amount of time, all of a sudden I'm kind of used to lifting weights. I'm kind of used to being stronger. I like being in shape. This is good. I feel better about myself. I look better. This is fine. Yeah? Well, I had to make you do it first because you wouldn't have done it on your own, even though you said you wanted to do it and even though you knew it was good for you. Same thing with teaching kids good behaviors. They don't automatically do them. Not most. If you got one who does, then you just go to the Lord and say, thank you, Lord. Thank you. You gave me a freebie. I got a mulligan round. Appreciate the mulligan round. But most kids have to be taught. You don't do that. You do this instead. Dr. A, why don't you just teach him to do this instead? Because you have to have the ability to stop the bad before the good can take the root. Because those of you who are Christians, fallen human nature, we know this. We're more bent toward acting that way, especially when we're a kid. We don't have necessarily a mature moral piece of control. Okay, thanks for joining me here on this E-Person Monday. I thank Eric Dumont for all of the button pushing and the sliding of the buttons that he does over there in Ann Arbor, and the EWTN folks. Appreciate so very much all you do. Walk with God. Always.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit drray.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.